Hey there, foreigners! This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is Lakshmi Kodali. Lakshmi started two companies. His first one is a services company called LAD Solutions, which primarily serves e-commerce companies. After succeeding in LAD Solutions and building it to a multi-million dollar business, he moved his attention to Premi.com. Lakshmi in the interview later explains what Premi does, but I can tell you now that Premi is a B2C product company. Today he talks in depth about how he started his services business and how he built it to a multi-million dollar revenue. He also talks about how he almost lost all of it in 2012 when Google changed their algorithm and how he built it back up. Having built a successful services company, he also shares what he thinks about the limitations of a services company and why he chose to move from services to a product business. He also talks why he recommends others start offering their services first before building their own product. Check out my interview with Lakshmi.
Lakshmi, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Hi.
Thanks for being here, Lakshmi. So let me start with the money question first. What revenue did LAD Solutions make in 2016 so far?
2016, we are under 5 million.
What is your goal for 2016?
LAD-wise, I'm fine. That is more of a service-based company. It is bread and butter. The new venture that we are doing, that is my focus as of now.
I see.
So, we are focusing on that and...
You're talking about Premi.
Yeah. The okay. Premi, the spending intelligence product that we have. Hopefully, we launch it. We are right now doing beta testing. We have some pilot projects going on with 8 national merchants. And we have also added close to 100,000 merchants into our system. So almost you have a deal from every corner of the United States. So the goal is to launch it in a proper way, get user traction. Hopefully people, users love it, get it to a stage where we can love it, users start loving it.
I see. And what is allowing you to do it for Premi is the revenue from LAD Solutions. And today's focus is going to be more around LAD Solutions. We'll start up with, we'll come to Premi towards the end. So before we go into the story of how you build the business of LAD Solutions, let's talk about what was before LAD. So you were doing a master's in computer science, right?
Yeah.
So did you was LAD Solutions your first startup ever, or were you working at other startups before?
I was working in, I worked in what, 3 other startups. Mm-hmm. Not actually startups per se, but yeah, 2 were definitely startups. 2 other jobs, actually 3 jobs I did before I finally started my company. So 3 jobs, 2 startups, total 5 jobs you can say before you start your own company.
What were you doing for your other startups?
So my first company that I worked with, this was during my final year of my BTech. This was in GameLoft. I was doing Java testing, Java tester. Then worked with, once I graduated from BTech, I worked with Infosys. That also for a very brief period for 6 months. GameLoft also was for around like 6-7 months during my final year. Infosys was around like 6-7 months. Then after that came to the US. Started doing my master's. While doing my master's itself, first year I was working under a professor under the computer lab under Barry Weem. Then second year I went out, I was working with Avgapi.
Yeah.
That there I was a Python and a backend programmer, Linux based programmer. After that worked with Veritas Prep, which is a GMAT coaching company, GMAT and SAT based coaching company. There I was more of a Facebook app developer.
So you were working in, you had a computer science major and you were working in developer roles all throughout. Right? And what got you interested in starting your own? Because there are so many developers out there who don't start their own businesses, right?
So starting a company was all, to be honest, like starting a company was always my goal. That was always back going in the back of my mind. Actually, not only a company, to become something bigger than just being a small business owner or an entrepreneur. Even LAD is a service-based company. This is a small bread and butter industry that goes on, that I'm doing. But to become something in life, something that is people will remember you once you're dead, becoming something memorable is more important. In life, there's one theory that I have. If you have 2 minutes, I'll explain you why this whole process is going on. I have a theory in life that first thing is you need to at every step try to learn what you're doing. Like try to learn the next step, try to go move forward. So the reason why I did so many jobs while I was in BTech, all I was studying my master's or all these things is to learn how the whole company, whole enterprise works. Like before you start your own company, my advice is to always learn, do as many jobs as possible, but do it for the purpose of actually learning. Mm-hmm. So Gameloft, I was there. It was more or less like a startup in India. They were just opening up the base over here. It is actually a very big company in Canada and Montreal. But in India, it was a startup. They're growing. When you're working with UpGuppy, it is a startup. All other companies that I worked, I was very close to the CEOs or the operations directors, trying to see how they think, what they do, what else is going on in the entire company, how to actually run. And while you're doing that, you kind of like find your own taste, which company you want to work. So my advice is same thing. Anybody who wants to start a business, learn. Go join your competitor's business or do something else in the same industry. Mm-hmm. Work for them. Learn. Try to learn what you have to do before you start your own. And ideally, try to have a mentor also. My first business, LAD Solutions, the best thing that I did was I had David join as a partner.
Yeah,
in the
so
company.
We'll go into David's story later. But before we go that, I was curious about your background when you were growing up. You told me earlier that you're from a business family also, right? Which influenced the way you thought about starting up. Can you tell us more about that? How it was like growing up? Would you help your dad in his own business or would you go to his office? Like, what did you see that influenced you?
Definitely. I come from a business family. Mm-hmm. Seeing my dad work, obviously he was doing real estate and other things. So that was definitely a big motivation. How they are doing. I always read a lot of books about all the entrepreneurs and all the people that I like. I read mostly biographies. Mm-hmm. So that gives me a good inspiration.
What's your favorite one?
I am a big fan of Richard Branson, Lee Iacocca.
Lee Iacocca, yeah, I like that one.
And then Akio Morito, Sony Corporation founder. Even to be honest, Bill Gates is very strong, very hardworking. In the initial 20 years of his life, he really worked really, really hard. Now he's turned more into a philanthropist and a good, very good person.
What is your most favorite one? What is your top?
I pick and choose from each person what
Got it.
Do. But Andrew Carnegie, I would say, is probably my favorite.
Yeah, Andrew Carnegie.
Andrew Carnegie.
I have to pick that one up. I love biographies as well. I really enjoyed Lee Iacocca's one. So I have to pick that one up. And I'll also leave it in the show notes for listeners who wants to leave the link to the book in the show notes if someone wants to pick it up. So let's talk about your life after your master's. You met David halfway through your master's, right? Who was your mentor? And how did you meet David and what did you do for him?
David, I met him. David actually had an intern, kind of like a job in his company. He was running an online marketing company, e-commerce. So all these jobs that I was doing, at that time, my thinking was I'll come back to India and he'll create an e-commerce company. So I took up the internship with David because he was running an online e-commerce jewelry store, silver jewelry store. So thought what is going on, and then I felt I could probably learn a lot in that job. So I took it up and I was working with him.
What were you doing for them?
So we were doing online marketing. So Google AdWords, Facebook was a new thing. Facebook
and you were doing them yourself at this time, right? As an intern, you would you were doing them yourself at this time as an intern. You'd go into, you'd be running these ads, doing the adverts and all that for David's company, which is dreamlandjewelry.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dreamland Jewelry, Badass Jewelry, they're all David's companies.
How many companies he had at that time?
He has like five websites. Uh-huh. More or less all of them have only one backend, but front-end websites are different.
Uh-huh.
Different websites. Then he is now getting into manufacturing and sourcing of his own products also. So he's kind of like doing vertical integration. So he not only has different distribution partners, but instead of having jewelry suppliers, he's actually getting it manufactured in China itself.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing that. So he's doing complete vertical integration to be ahead of the competition.
I see. At that time, you, while doing your master's in the summer, you did the internship or in the semester?
This was during the fall semester.
Fall semester. Okay. And so in the morning, you would go to your computer science classes. In the evening, you would come and do SEO work for David's company.
Yeah, online marketing, everything, Google AdWords, everything I used to do. But it was not really morning, evening. We had classes only like Monday and Friday.
I see.
So I was free during most of the time. So I used to go there, work with him.
Uh-huh. And this was in fall of 2008, right? How long you worked for him before? You said earlier, right? Before your goal was to start an e-commerce site in India and you had this theory to learn everything before you actually do it. So it is in line with your theory. So you went and worked with him. So when did you come to India and start your jewelry e-commerce company?
I did not start my e-commerce company. So that's the interesting part. Instead of coming, before joining, that was my motivation to join, to learn what is going on. So every job that I'd pick up for 6-7 months, there is some motivation to what to learn. Once I learn what is going on, there is no more interest for me to continue that job.
Yeah.
So I look for something else. Anyway, so David, that was interest. But what happened was at the end, David, we were coming up with the idea that why don't we open up this service-based company with getting the work done in India. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part was David was ready to join as a mentor and as a partner in the company. So it was me, David and Ali. That is actually Lad Solutions, Lakshmi, Ali and David.
Yeah.
So Lad Solutions' name is.
Yeah.
So all three of us, David actually put the investment into it and he was actually like a mentor. And me and Ali were working and to grow the company. And yeah.
So how did you meet Ali?
Ali was actually also working with David.
I see. And both of you were
working. So I was focused more on taking care of the India side of the operations and all the technical side of the implementation and the data analytics, data crunching, implementation. Ali was more on the client-facing side, trying to talk to the clients.
So we are in now early 2009, right? When you moved to India and you started your own company with a physical location. How did you get, and David was also on board as a mentor. How did you get the clients?
First few clients were all, like, obviously David's own company was a client for us. After that, David's friends were also clients for us. We got a lot of instrumental, say, music companies, a lot of other clothing companies. All of them actually started coming towards, we were in downtown Los Angeles. So that was a big advantage for us.
Mm-hmm. The front office was in downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I see.
So we got a lot of clients from there. So that worked out pretty well initially. Then
so what would you do with them for a music company, for example, at that time?
So they had an online e-commerce store. We mm-hmm. were taking care of all their entire back-end stuff.
Yeah.
So entire maintaining their entire e-commerce platform, email marketing, from pop-ups to shipping. So everything except the product-related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We would take care of everything on the platform that is required, including AdWords, Google AdWords, SEO, customer support related issues also, chat especially we would take care, call sometimes the owners would take care, if there is overflow we would take care of them. So everything that an e-commerce company would actually need. So right, even now Lad is the same thing. If you just need to have a product that sells,
uh-huh.
and we will take care of everything else. We'll take care of the distribution and we'll try to distribute it to in Amazon or in eBay partners. Yeah. We'll take care of your campaign management with SEO or Google AdWords, try to manage, optimize it to a very extensive level. We'll try to do e-commerce platforms, e-commerce optimization and all the interlinking between them. So if you have an abandoned cart, you want to make sure that converts, it converts into sales. If you have return customers, you want to make sure you want to do retargeting. So we take care of all those activities.
So back in 2009, it started out that way. It started out being the all-in-one solution. Or did you start out with just Google AdWords work and then gradually progress towards other kind of
Our main services? Offering at that time was Google AdWords because that was a new thing during that time. Everybody wanted, and e-commerce companies were ready to spend millions of dollars. They were already spending money, a lot of money online. So Google AdWords was a very good platform. Facebook was a very good platform at that time.
What would they spend the $1 million on at that time?
On keywords. On
the
traffic.
Okay. On actually buying the ads.
At that time, since the competition was low, it was very profitable for companies to advertise. Now what's happening is, at that time, maybe like for a given keyword, for even for a very good keyword, maybe there were like two or three players in the market who would compete for it. Now, any e-commerce thing you search for it, there'll be at least like 15, 20 people competing for the same keyword, and bidding becomes very outrageous. Prices go very, very high. Yeah. Things have become very competitive. Even SEO also, at that time, nobody even knew what SEO was. Very few people knew what actually SEO meant and what they would have to do to get your website listed in Google or Facebook. So we started doing those things. And our focus was primarily...
What would you charge these music companies' e-commerce sites?
It depends on which package, what all they need, from $2,000 to $10,000. Changes from what all they need.
I see. For $2,000, what would I get if I was a music company in 2009?
Our main service was Google AdWords.
I see.
So you would manage your Google AdWords. For $10,000, we would take care of everything. If you have a blog, we'll write articles, we'll take care of your SEO, we'll take care of your Facebook marketing, we'll take care of your email marketing campaign, we'll take care of your entire e-commerce platform optimization, tweaking of your entire platforms. Like now things like that you see as common in almost all platforms is like one-click shopping, checkout, optimizing your buttons, your flow of your site. These things were not really that common at that time. Abandoned shopping cart, if you see.
They were not common as in they were not common in the platforms that were used to build the e-commerce websites. Now the platform itself has them. Since they were not common in the platforms, you had to build them yourself.
Build them and optimize them. They wouldn't really be like standard in all the platforms.
Got it.
Even now, if you look at it, abandoned cart, if you have...
What's an abandoned cart? You mentioned it so many times and I don't know what it is. Can you explain?
Basically, you go to a shopping cart, you put the product in the cart or you add it to your shop, your wish list, and you don't buy it. You just go away from the site. Now, what we are doing is we send out an email saying that you want to buy this product. We have an offer or something. Next, we also try to do retargeting on that particular product. Wherever you go to other websites, we try to show you the same product. Remind you that you have this product in our shopping cart. Why don't you just buy it?
Okay.
And optimize making you buy it at the right time.
So all of these services that you provided in the initial years, they were all done in the US or in India?
The structure was, we were like a hybrid company like Apple, designed in US, manufactured in India. So that was the concept from day one.
I see. So you were here being the brains of the company and trying to figure out the flows and all, and the actual work would happen more in India.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about the setting up of India office. How did that happen and how do you find good people?
Setting up an office is not really that hard. It is just, you just need to know people who will do it for you. Find just logistics work. My father is there. We have an office. We have all the administrative stuff that is needed. So my dad has an office already. There are staff already, all the accountants, everybody are already, all the statutory compliance, everything, we can get things done. Those are just procedures.
Yeah. But these are the skills that you are working on are all new, right? In 2009, as you said, there's no one doing it.
So we had to do a lot of training. So that time, at that time, more or less, you're hiring, trying to hire smart people. People who can, who grab things quickly and then educate them.
What was the typical profile of people who you would hire in India at that time? Were they new college grads or?
Yeah, new college grads or people who have been in some sort of like an e-commerce based or some sort of like a technology, similar technology based company. Like they would have done something with websites. They knew what a website was. They knew what Facebook was. They knew how to do marketing a little bit. So you would hire them and then you would.
What did you pay them in India?
Around 25,000, 30,000.
25,000-30,000 rupees per month, which comes to $500-$600 per month.
Yeah.
And how would you train them? Because it's not easy. I'm working with a with someone in Philippines, and I'm trying to train him, for example, on how to do my editing for my podcast. And we not editing, writing show notes and doing the other things. And it's a lot of work to train someone. And how did you do it scalably? Because you had, you have to tell me how many people you had in 2009, but I'm assuming you had more than 10 people. So what was your training process?
Training process is, it's always helps if you're in person. Mm-hmm. I'd spend time in India trying to train them. Mm-hmm. Once the people are trained and established, you always have the team leads who are training the next guys. And I try to make good training videos, always have Skype use, make best use of Skype or screen shares, have calls every day, stand up meetings every day, try to make the flow structured for them. So
you just first train and have frequent checkpoints to see if they can, if they miss something, they get retrained on it.
So always in India, since manpower is not that expensive, you can always have a supervisor supervise them.
Mm-hmm.
See, you train one guy, that guy trains the next guy, and you always keep the main guy who trained as like a reviewer. So other guys, the juniors are always doing the work and they're reviewing it. And your most experienced guy is always reviewing somebody else's work, and he's trying to give you the only the best output. And eventually you also have to be a reviewer in between, see how things are going on. And your focus is only on training the main guy.
Mm-hmm.
So just the final output. Like that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And if things don't work out, always add double layer reviewers also. Every work gets reviewed by two senior people before it's finally sent to the client. That too in India. So again, that way you can make sure the quality is always ensured.
Mm. How many people were working in LAT Solutions India office by the end of 2009?
We had around, I think, 15.
15 people. And what was the revenue you were bringing in 2009? I was amazed to see the number. You mentioned it earlier, and it's also on your
LinkedIn. We made around more than a million.
Uh-huh.
We made more than a million during 2009. Then 2010 was really good. We scaled up.
So coming to 2010, right? You mentioned earlier that the first 12 clients who bought this $1 million was easy because they came from word of mouth. And what happened beyond those 12 clients?
Then we actually needed a proper sales team and a proper marketing team. We need to get... See, once they're coming through word of mouth and they know you, the trust is already there. If there is a new client, you need to establish trust with them. You need to know what they're doing. They need to trust you. So you need to establish that authority, saying that you have that knowledge, presentations, materials, all that stuff needs to go into them. You need to earn their trust. And then finally, you need to have a sales team to follow up.
Mm.
So you need to have a big flow of deals coming in. So for an average, a sales guy needs to talk to at least 400 clients or possible clients in a month, who have the money, who have the need, and who have the urgency to even start this month. So 40 good leads, if that there are there, like you will have at least like 10 of them convert.
400 or 40?
400, sorry.
400, okay.
So that is the metric that we have. So 400, he needs to find 400 leads which have money, qualified leads. Basically, they need to have the money, they need to have the need for your product, and they also need to have the urgency to start maybe this month, next month, or within the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, they just delay it for years and years and 6 months, 1 year, and they forget it, you forget it. That's not useful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and people who don't have money, it again becomes...
Why would someone have urgency in this space? Because you're doing more SEO work, right? And what would create such urgency?
Urgency is because, see, in this space, if you're an e-commerce company and you're a store, you're already spending a lot of money on marketing.
Mm-hmm.
As an e-commerce company, if you look at it, you're an e-commerce entrepreneur. The main biggest pressure that you have is to have good product selection, then have good marketing. These are the only two responsibilities, main responsibility you have. So product selection, obviously it is you're buying it from somebody else, so they're always selling it to you. Marketing, it's you're always thinking about ways to sell more and more of your products.
Mm.
So you're there. More than 50% of any e-commerce revenue goes back again into marketing only. If an e-commerce company is making $5 million in sales, they're spending $2 million, they're reinvesting $2 million again to get new customers in.
And if they're spending so much and it's not effective, that creates the urgency. So,
go ahead. That's a good thing. Yeah. And AdWords and everything, if you can help them optimize it, if you can help them save even $50,000 in that $1 million, that's a big amount.
Yeah. You said before, right, that you tried several tactics to get new customers before you honed in on, okay, we need sales guys reaching out to 400 people. Did you try other tactics? And like, what was it like trying tactics that didn't work?
Lot of things. We tried so many things. Yeah.
Can you tell us about one that didn't work?
We tried so many things that didn't work. For example, in the beginning, we used to say everybody needed our service. We used to think, oh, we are an SEO online marketing company. Every company that has a website would need our service. Everybody will spend. Everybody will hire. We would call up for every company. Then we realized that that's not how it's going to happen. Then we felt that, okay, only e-commerce companies are our best clients, or SaaS-based companies are our best clients. So we started focusing on those only mostly. Initially, we would go call up your corner bakery, or we would call up your general manufacturing shops or some places. They wouldn't really be a good fit for us. So like that.
And then finally, you honed in on few services, service-based businesses that worked well for you, right? What were they?
Finally, after e-commerce, we found out that lawyers, dentists spend a lot of money on marketing because they're always looking for new clients. So that is also a good niche for us.
Then we are into now 2011, right? When you started scaling in the dentists and lawyer space, what would you do for dentists and lawyers? I believe you started doing some new services for dentists and lawyers because they needed them, right?
Yeah, for most customization for them, like more custom needs for them, trying to save their time in appointment setting, trying to save other things. Yeah. So we have a development shop now of almost 40 developers working for us. So
and you started this development shop in 2009 and you started getting dentists and lawyers as clients?
Maybe, yeah, during that time. And that time we were doing just basic websites. But again, this was when our SEO started dying out in 2012, 2013, our revenue started falling.
Oh, we'll come to 2012 and 13 in a bit. I was more curious about in 2011, what were the other things that you were doing how are you scaling the services in 2011?
So basically, I'll just give you a synopsis. So 2009, we started, we got word of mouth, we got first clients. 2010, we scaled up more through salespeople. 2011 also we scaled up. After that, 2012, 2013, we dropped down because SEO and our main services weren't working.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of revenue because of main services failed. Then we started diversifying into websites and into mobile app development and a couple of other things.
Yeah, we'll get into the details of that in a bit, actually.
From being a mobile app and a mobile development company, we learned how it goes. And then finally, actually, if you look at that, like, that's how we are making most of the revenue coming in. We have these developers right now, 40 developers, as I said, who are doing like hardcore development, not only from e-commerce to mobile app, iOS, Android apps, hybrid apps, and the PHP web applications also we are developing. So we have that application now.
You mentioned earlier that in 2011 time frame, the SEO was much easier. What was SEO at that time? How was it different from what it is now?
That time, if you did good on-page optimization and you submitted it to Google crawler everywhere, basic stuff, if you did, Google would give you at least a decent ranking. Competition was very, very low. And then from there, if you started doing a little bit of backlinking and any of other stuff, like some basic hacks, if you did, for a simple hack like that worked for a very long time, was Google used to give a lot of authority to old websites. So if your domain is registered like 10 years plus, you would automatically get a big boost in Google. What we used to do is, and there was another loophole in Google algorithm, was if you did a redirect, 301 redirect from any website to any website, Google will think that is your old website domain name. You change your domain name to a new one, it will give you the same reputation as your old old URL. Mm-hmm. So we used to buy old domain names, which are 10 years, 15 years old domain names, just because they have their ages so big. Then we would redirect them to the new client's websites, do a complete permanent redirect, and we would get the full benefit. Mm-hmm. That was a very good hack that was working. Now Google has become smart, that word went down. So it did so many other things we used to do. So many things Google is catching up, we catch up. So we are learning. Now we are trying to figure out what is the best way to always...
What were link exchanges at that time? What did it mean?
Like you would exchange links with partners. Mm-hmm. Like you would see, you are an e-commerce company. You say you have silver jewelry. We would call up maybe other companies who are not related to silver jewelry, maybe music industries or maybe something else, maybe clothing or something else. And we would do link exchanges between both the companies. And if it is your own client, then you can always do link exchanges between all your clients.
Yeah. As in they put your links on their website and you put their links on. And is it like a ad or is it just somewhere in the footer that no one sees?
We used to do it as an ad. Okay. We used to do it as an ad, but in pages where nobody used to see much.
Okay. Just for SEO juice.
SEO juice, we used to do. We used to do ads on the side.
Okay.
That worked very well. But what? Now Google has caught up to that, so you can't do it much.
What is your what was your revenue in 2011? You mentioned before that you scaled to 7 people in the US doing the sales and client management by the end of 2011. And what did the revenue scale up to?
I think we reached around 3. I think so. Mm-hmm.
3 million by 2011. And then Google made a major algorithm update in early 2012. How did that impact you?
It was a big impact. A lot of clients got lost. Our core SEO was our core service. We lost rankings over there. We lost
as in many of your clients or just one or two?
Almost 80% of our clients, we lost rankings for them. Over a period of time, like not one time, but over a period of 3-4 months, we lost value for all the 80% of our clients. So we needed to quickly figure out what to do with how to add more value to them. We lost revenue also.
When you lost your pricing model, was it based at that time on the ranking? I mean, if you come to page one, you pay so much, or was it based on?
No, it is a flat service fees only. Uh-huh. Flat service fees only. But see, if you suddenly, if you lose, say, 50% of your traffic, the client wouldn't start paying you, right? They'll get upset, they'll be angry with you. Mm-hmm. And if, say, if SEO was bringing 50% of your sales at that time, then it's a huge drop in their sales also. So, obviously, they would like to discontinue, or we would start working for them for free till we figure out what actually the problem was. So it took us almost like 7-8 months to figure out what actually was the solution to it, how to come up with alternative options. So all during that time, for a few of them, they discontinued, we didn't work for them. Few of them, we would do it for a discount price or for free.
What discount? Like 50% discount or even more?
Like almost zero, I would say.
Almost zero, okay.
Because if they lost sales and everything, we wouldn't really charge them. But the main problem was, the main time lost was we couldn't charge the clients. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we didn't really know what alternative solutions we could think of immediately to bring up that lost traffic, what we could do quickly to get up. So that was a big hurdle to finding out actually the problem, what mm-hmm. actually was the problem, how to fix the problem.
So and at this time, you still had the same team. Actually, how many people were in the India office at this time?
That time, I think we had a good team at that time. Mostly all SEO, AdWords and everybody, we had around like around 35 people or so.
35 people. Did you have to let people go because you couldn't?
We didn't. That was also a mistake we did. Mm-hmm. We didn't let people go immediately when we had losses. We thought we could find a solution. Letting people know go is a very tough thing. We delayed it. We absorbed all the cost losses. We lost a lot of money during that time.
What was the biggest cost at that time? It was not people, right? or was it people?
People and also cost of goods also were there. We were spending a lot of money on SEO. You need to spend money. People think SEO is like you need to do just labor work, like content writing, article writing, this and this. But if you have to actually spend money too, yeah, it is 50% energy, 50% money, because you are doing good press releases, you are paying your press agencies, you're writing good exchanges, you need to advertise a little bit of those articles also, you need to get links, you need to do on-page optimization. So there is a little bit of money that you're spending. And since we didn't know what was not working, what was working and what was the problem, we didn't cut off those expenses for most of our clients. So you're still paying them, you're trying to do the work. Employees were anyway still there, they're still doing the work, they're still writing the blogs, they're still writing the generating the content. We obviously had to spend the money to generate more organic leads. So that's where we were still spending money.
And tell us about that one client who got backlisted because of massive link buying.
Yeah. We did a few, but they did, the client was very, very eager to get good results. So they did, on their own, they did some massive, massive deals with some big universities and other people. So it backfired a lot.
And they went and bought how many links?
Like 6 million links or 7 million links. They got it from all different universities and that too in the footer.
So in Google, a university web page in the footer where no one is seeing it, they would have
it
a link
is
to their
website. Completely unrelated. There were links to that website. So obviously Google, when you look at it, they'll get doubt. If there is a manual review, people will easily find out that it is a bot link.
Uh-huh.
It's a link exchange bot, so it will backfire.
So they were penalized and you had to fix it for that. So at this time you said you were limiting the services to only basic on-page optimization and content writing,
mm-hmm.
right? And what would that pay you?
That's what I'm saying. We didn't really have our existing clients who were actually paying good money.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't really getting good money out of it because organically and SEO-wise, if you do, we weren't able to generate quick results for them. And they lost traffic. Basically whenever Google algorithm changes, it takes a little time to figure out what actually is the change. So you're trying to do reverse engineering here. You don't know what they did. They're not going to tell you openly what exactly changes they're doing. We have to figure out the formula, what they're putting weightages on, where the weightages actually have changed. It is all a simple algorithm formula.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a weightage to certain parameters and it is a big equation. They're taking 20 or 200 parameters into account. And each parameter has a different weightage. So you need to figure out what that formula is and you need to see which ones are the ones that have the most weightage now. Try to add more things. The ones that actually have, now they're adding even negative weightages also. If you have certain things that are happening on your site, that will add negative weightages.
What is one that has negative weightage?
So like link buying.
Uh-huh.
If you have a lot of link exchanges from the same domain, link buying, have certain blacklisted websites also which are blacklisted. If you have a link coming from a blacklisted website, it adds as a negative weightage to you.
Uh-huh. And there is no way to find out which are those blacklisted websites.
You can
find
you
out.
Do a little bit of research, you can find out. Obviously, those are links to your site. So you can
figure out what the sites. If I see a new site, would I know if it was a blacklisted site before I go get a link from them?
You can know.
Okay.
If you're an expert, you'll know whether it is a blacklisted site or not site. So you'll know. So things like these, to figure out what is there, those things take a lot of time.
What did the revenue drop to in 2012?
As I said, we dropped below 1 million.
Below 1 million.
During 2012 and 2013, we dropped below 1 million actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we lost almost like 60% of our revenue. Only our basic maintenance, e-commerce platform maintenance was only getting the revenue. Everything else was down. And then we started focusing more, we found out solutions. Now we are diversified into mobile apps, e-commerce.
Yeah, apps. This time is when you started diversifying into other things, right? But before we go into diversification, you mentioned earlier that just now that you delayed letting go of employees. So towards the end of 2012, you actually let go of people?
Yeah, 2012, 2013, we let go a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, and what was the team size? Like how many people did go? Half the workforce or just 10%?
Yeah, half the workforce.
Half the workforce. So it was down to like 15 to 20 employees.
Yeah. It wasn't like one day we were letting go like a huge layoff or something. Mm. Like that. It was like in phase-wise. We also, as I said, we also didn't know what exactly, when to let go, what would happen. Maybe tomorrow two other clients will come up, maybe they won't come up, maybe we can figure out an issue, maybe something will happen. So there was always this optimistic hope, and these are all trained employees, so you can't let them go. We had to give some people, we gave them notices. So they're like 10 we would let go, 5 we would let go, phase-wise we were letting go of people. And then we finally figure out, we now, if you look at it retrospectively, look at it, you should have let go of them immediately the moment you did it. You would have saved a lot of money. Mm-hmm. We paid for more than 15 to 20 employees. We paid unnecessarily. We paid them salaries and we made them do unnecessary work, which is more expensive for us. Mm-hmm. We spent more money behind them to continue their work, which actually didn't add any value or get us any revenue. We were paying out of our own pockets. So these are all big things.
Mistakes. Let's come to 2012, how you came out of it. This is when you started branching into a few other areas beyond SEO, right? What did you start adding?
We are now into mobile app.
What was the first thing you added, rather, after?
Web development, mobile web apps, and also iOS and Android app development.
I see. You started app and web development. Who was one of the first big customers that you got in this space beyond SEO?
All our e-commerce clients, only if you look at it, we were doing web development for them. Mm-hmm. To a minimum extent. Then we started becoming more extensive into that.
What do you mean extensive? Can you tell me more details?
We were outsourcing. We would focus only on SEO and e-commerce and these things only. And we would say, okay, we will help you find somebody else, and we would try to actually not take up that work, mm-hmm. web development work. But then we started taking up web development work, and clients started coming in. We started working with e-commerce companies.
What did you actually do, web development meaning? Can you explain?
Like e-commerce platforms, web design. So if you have a SaaS product, we build your entire SaaS platform. Zend-based work from Magento. If you have a custom-based application that you want to build, from UI designing to hosting it in Amazon Cloud, scalable platform from 0 to 1 million users or 10 million users, we'll scaling up platforms, we'll take care. Hosting-wise, we'll take care. We'll design stuff for you. Mobile apps also, same thing. We'll develop mobile apps. We'll take care of all the stuff from all the way from not only developing it, but making sure you're doing a little bit of growth hacking for them also, for the mobile app companies and everywhere, trying to get them to scale up, grow the companies, and get them more attention. Yeah.
Yeah. So how long it took you to get back to the 2012 levels of revenue of 3 million? Was it in 2013 or was it later?
14, 15.
And it was, what got you there was expanding into mobile app and web development and making the e-commerce sites on Amazon and eBay for other people.
And Amazon and eBay is a distribution partner.
Okay.
So you would have your own e-commerce store. Instead of traffic coming to your store and buying it from you, you take your product and you distribute them on Amazon and on eBay. Mm-hmm. So eBay, they already have traffic people there. Registered people there. So you're just selling it to them and eBay will pay you.
When did you start doing this?
We were doing this from very beginning, actually.
Oh, very beginning. And you just scaled it during the 2013 when it was needed. What was one of the big highlights from 2013 to 2015? What went really well in that time frame, in the 2 years?
We picked up on SEO back again. Mm-hmm. AdWords again picked up a little bit. But again, we were always cautious. See, God knows what will happen again. Uh-huh. So, mobile app, we started doing it. Even mobile app also, one big issue with mobile app development is, we have projects for, say, if a project comes in 4 or 5 months, the project will be done. Then we always have to keep finding new clients. Uh-huh. There'll be extensive, immediate work. And another issue most of the time when we work with startups is that they need immediate resources. So we lose a lot of projects because at that very time, we don't have resources to take up them. Like, they are in a hurry to get things done. Like, they don't want to wait for 1 month, 2 months until this. They want it to be done very quickly. If a standard product takes like 2 months to develop, they want it in 2 weeks. Mm. So then we have to put more resources. Everybody should be working day and night for that. So like that, it takes a lot of time. Mm. And then again, suddenly when their product is built, especially startups, everywhere. When the product is built, they don't want the resources anymore. So again, we have to find other projects. And if you don't find other projects, again, we are at risk. So things like that.
So it pays one time, unlike SEO, which pays on an ongoing basis. So that is the hard thing. So just one last question and we'll move on to Premi quickly. What was the revenue in 2015?
2015, as I said, same around like 3.5-4.
I see. You, so, see, you know, life seems to be going well in the services space, right? Yes, you had some struggles, but you eventually picked it back up. Why move into building another product?
Basically, building a product was always, it's always been my passion. I wanted to build something, but the main problem that we realized while we were working with e-commerce and all these companies was that, say we worked with Groupon and advertising and all the sources. So when you, I'll give you an example. One of the biggest problems that merchants face, businesses face is, when you are advertising on Google AdWords, you are advertising on the search that the customer is doing. Like he's typing for some product, say he wants to buy Nike shoes or Nike products or something. But just because he's searching doesn't mean that he's interested in buying that product. You don't know whether the person actually has the money to buy the product or not also. Whether he has the habit to buy that product or not also, you don't know. So things like this, but we as merchants, we spend so much money behind it because he's searching for it. Because there is no other better alternative. The only other better alternatives are TV, radio, and magazine advertising and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Either you advertise on Facebook or Google, these are only the main ones. So that is the best option that merchants have got. But the most important factor is trying to see if the person actually has the money to buy it or the habit to actually buy their product.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where we felt that there needs to be a better advertising option where merchants can actually decide what, having full control over like who to target, who's going. And one more example is we did a lot of deals with Groupon. And especially with dentists, in the beginning, we tried out with dentists with Groupon. So one of the biggest problems that we faced was the customers who come with Groupon and other deal sites, the issue is that they are actually deal hunters and the bottom of the barrel people. So today they have a deal over there, they're coming there. Tomorrow there's a deal from somewhere else, they go there.
Yeah.
So there is no loyalty, there is no section. So again, so these are the only options that are left for a merchant. So they're either advertising on Google and Facebook and all the, these sources, or they're putting it on some deal,
mm-hmm.
on some coupon site to generate traffic. Neither of these two are perfect. Like there is deficiency in this. And then we thought there needs to be a better option where you can, a business owner can choose based on this habits of the consumer, like what you like to buy, whether you have the money to buy the product or not, what is your influence, what you like to tweet about. So that is where Privmi came up. So mm-hmm. Privmi is a B2C platform where we connect between businesses and consumers, and we are connecting them based on the consumer's spending and social habits. So the way it works is when you sign up to our application, we'll ask you to sign up with your Facebook. And we'll ask you to link your debit and credit cards. Just because of that, when you do those activities, we try to make you as a VIP in the places where you like to spend money. Say, for example, you like to go to Italian restaurants and you go and dine like 6 times in a month. You go to Italian restaurants.
And you know that, you know that information because the credit card is linked.
Because of the credit card.
Mm.
And also because of a little bit about what you do on your social media activities. Say, if you ever liked a... anything on Facebook or on Twitter related to Italian food or Italian restaurants, or you ever done a check-in at a place, or you ever tweeting about something, then we know that you like to go to those places. So then it adds a lot of value to the merchants to target you with offers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're already going 6 times in a month, you already have the habit, you're spending say $400 doing that every month. So you're already spending that money. Now, as a merchant, he can give you 50% off, he can make you come, he can give you good service. Like he wants to actually treat you with very good service because he wants to make sure that all the 6 times you come to his restaurant only.
Yeah.
And he wants to make sure you spend the entire $400 with him.
Yeah.
So that is the motivation that the business owner actually has. He doesn't, like, unlike Groupon, where the business owner is actually losing money by giving you 50% off. He's actually losing money by giving that deal. But he's hoping that he'll come second time, third time, and he'll probably make money, which doesn't happen with Groupon customers at all.
Yeah.
Here we are figuring out what is the habit of the consumer, what is going on. And secondly, now business owners, if you look at it, they want two kind of customers. Customer who has the money to buy a product and will keep buying, or customers who have the influence. Like, maybe you don't have the money to buy the product, but you have the capacity to get 10 more friends to that place. Like, you run a podcast, you like to tweet about things, you like share about people who are following you.
Yeah.
If somebody says if you say you like some place, people will listen to you and people will go there. So then there people like to give you a lot of offers too.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. So like my wife likes to take a lot of pictures of her dresses. She likes to put it on where we're going. So like people like that, now merchants would like to target those people.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and that will only be like known from social habits, which is by connecting social profiles.
These are the two kind of things that the business owners actually care. Like people who have money and people who can get them 10 more customers.
So how many businesses do you have on your platform right now?
Right now, we have like integrated, I wouldn't really say as a hack, but we have integrated deals from 100,000 businesses onto our platform. So today, if you just download, even the business hasn't signed up with us, if they have a deal anywhere on the web, we are trying to give it to you, to the consumer.
Okay.
And the benefit to you is, since we know what your spending habits are, we are not only trying to make, we are trying to show you what is relevant to you, first thing. Because we know what your spending habits are. We'll try to show you only what is relevant and targeted to you. We don't show you, like, if you go to Groupon, it will show you like mud bath and some sort of like stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't want those things. If you give me deals based on what I like Indian food, I like this clothing, I like to do, I like to go to movies. You give me deals based on where I'm already spending, it makes more sense to me.
Mm.
Secondly, all Privmi merchants will try to give you VIP services in the places where it is actually most relevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also what we are trying to do.
What users do you have right now on your platform?
Right now, we are testing it out in the South Bay in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So entire South Bay, we have around, we signed up around like 180 merchants.
Mm-hmm.
Local merchants we signed up. We are doing pilot projects with 8 national retailers like Five Guys, Quiznos. We are in the process of even working with pilot projects with Kohl's, Macy's, and Best Buy, Staples. We are in process of getting them also signed up to try to do pilot projects with them.
How about all users?
Users-wise, we have around like 20,000 users. And we are.
And
like,
even if I'm from a new area, which is not where you're doing pilot, you probably will have deals because you're aggregating from other deal sites, right? So right now I'm in Philadelphia. It still makes sense for me to sign up, and there might be deals around here. Okay, great.
You get all the nearby deals for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you and for your portfolio of companies, for LAD and for Premi?
So LAD is, it's a good one. It is a bread and butter. My suggestion for anyone who is doing entrepreneur also is like, try to have like a bread and butter income.
Mm-hmm.
Before you jump into any sort of like crazy entrepreneurship and you spend a lot of money on them, because you don't know what is going to happen. But life needs to go on. You need to pay your rent. You need to send your kids to school. You need to pay your mortgages. So always have a bread and butter income first sorted out.
Yeah.
Then once you have that established, try to invest into whichever product you have passion.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's been my formulas for now.
Yeah,
for
I was going to ask you, what advice do you have? But this good that you mentioned. Apart from this, any other advice you have for people listening to us right now who wants to start out?
My advice, this is the main advice.
Mm-hmm.
Have that set up because that will give you peace of mind financially. Second thing is try to have a mentor in whichever business you do, or learn before you do that, before you spend even a single dollar trying to do that, work for somebody. Learn on somebody else's dollars. Learn what you're doing. Do it for somebody else. Then, once you become an expert in that, then invest in yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great advice. And one way to do it in learning skills is using Fiverr and Upwork. I've seen people, I've known a few friends who wanted to learn SEO skills, and they started offering those services on Upwork. And once a client books them, they'll go learn the service and provide the service to them. So they're being experts on someone else's dime, like you said.
Yeah, same thing. Try to do internships. Try to do, if you want to do a restaurant, I would suggest work as a manager in some restaurant. Take up a franchisee, maybe do all that stuff, learn that stuff. Make money for somebody else, but do it for a short period, like for 6 months, 1 year, learn, do it. Then once you do it, then invest in yourself.
If people listening wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way to connect with you online?
Skype is the best way, or you can just do email me. Uh-huh. Email Lakshmi, it's LAKSHMI at PRIVME.
.com. Yeah, I will leave the link to your email in the show notes as well. Lakshmi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again and have an amazing day.